I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome to the Intercooler Podcast.
Welcome everybody to this bonus episode of the Intercooler Podcast. Dan Prosser and Andrew Frankel with you here. A freebie. Hopefully a nice little treat. Where we're talking about some of the most interesting cars that are going to go across the block at Bonham's latest auction, forthcoming auction at the Goodwood Revival.
Yeah.
So the sale is on September the 17th, that's this Saturday, from 10:30 a.m. at Goodwood during the Goodwood Revival. And actually, do you know what? We should say, shouldn't we? Because this will go out before the Goodwood Revival.
We're going to be there.
We're going to be there. Yeah, with Bonhams. We are going to have a little stand there. You're going to be there on the Friday. I'm going to be there on the Saturday. So if you're at the Goodwood Revival, come and say hello. It'd be good to talk to some subscribers or some podcast listeners. Yeah, do come and do that. So what are we doing with this bonus episode? We've done it a few times now, haven't we? What we do is we get the catalogue for a forthcoming sale, leaf
through
it.
Once we stop drooling.
And sort of fantasise over the cars we'd like to be bidding on. And so this is now the third one of these that we've done. And I'm learning that with a Bonham sale, you get two things. The first thing is variety. There always seems to be a real spread of stuff up for sale across the ages, across the categories. But often there is also a sort of theme. I remember when we did the Goodwood Festival of Speed auction preview, the sort of modern classic supercars was the theme. This one, being at the Goodwood Revival, which is more of a motorsport event, it seems like the theme is vintage and historic racing cars. But what we're going to do is, you and I are going to talk about some of the cars we like the look of. We're also going to pull in an expert from Bonhams a little bit later on. We can ask Louis if there is a particular theme to this one. So as I said, this sale is on Saturday, this coming Saturday, 10:30 a.m. There is a link in the description of this episode if you want to go and find out more, if you want to have a look through the catalogue. Andrew, there is one very clear headline car up for sale this weekend, and I think it's a car you're quite familiar with.
I drove it, yeah. So this is an Aston Martin DB3. It's not an Aston Martin DB2 4 Mark III. It's an Aston Martin DB3. So this is Aston Martin's first ever purpose-built racing car. They built 10 of them, and they made their debuts right at the end of 1951 and sort of raced through 1952. And of the 10, 5 were works cars and 5 were private. And of the 5 works cars, one of them won a really significant race, which was the Goodwood 9 Hours 1952. And this is that car. So this was the first significant race win by an Aston Martin prototype race car. So it's, and you can trace the line from that win in 1952 with that DB3 right through an unbroken line of competition race cars to then winning Le Mans and the World Sports Car Championship in 1959. Mm. So it's a hugely important car. It used to be black. They've changed it back to its original colours with the yellow noseband, and it looks amazing. And yeah, I a while back I drove it. I drove it on a track as fast as I could, and it was one of those cars that it just felt incredibly forgiving on your side. Not a car that that you think is trying to, you know, kill you. And yeah, it's a fantastic thing, and it's coming up for sale. It hasn't been for sale. I know it's been in the same ownership for years and years and years. So the opportunity to get far and away the best of the 10 DB3s hasn't been available to anyone for goodness knows how long. And yeah, it's coming up, and it'll be under the hammer on Saturday.
Around £3 million quid, they reckon.
Yeah, what is it? 2.8 to 3.3 is its guiding.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was Peter Collins and Pat Griffith who won that Goodwood 9 Hours in 1952. And yeah, the Goodwood 9 Hours back then was an important international endurance race, wasn't it? Was it a round of the world championship that year, do you know?
It wasn't a round of the world championship, but back then they had so many rounds, which everyone turned up to, which weren't rounds of the world championship. I mean, yeah. I think in the year that Aston Martin won the world championship, there were like, what was there? I think there was Sebring, Targa, Le Mans, the Tour of Trek. They're like four rounds of the entire championship that year. So it's not like, you know, if you weren't around, you didn't really matter. Very few races were rounds of the championship. So it wasn't. But that didn't mean that, you know, I think there were a team of three work C-type Jaguars. I mean, they're all sorts turned up for that. And this little Aston. And if you look at it, it may be that, you know, a lot of people won't even recognize it because its time came and went quite quickly. And obviously, you know, the Aston Martins from the later race cars from the mid and late 50s, the DB3S and the DBR1, which were, you know, even more successful and even more gorgeous, are the ones that kind of people know about and think about when they think of Aston races from that era. But, you know, it was the kind of start point. It is more than anything else, it's just an incredibly significant racing car, and not just an example of an incredibly significant racing car. That actual lot, that car itself, that chassis, is the one. So yeah, I'm really, really interested to see how that goes. I hope it does really well.
And it makes a huge difference, doesn't it, to how collectible I think that sort of car is, if it has won something significant in period, which this car absolutely has.
Yeah, particularly with, you know, Peter Collins driving it. I mean, yeah. Absolute legend. You know, that must have been, it actually must have been one of his very earliest races, because when he very sadly died at the Nürburgring in 1958, I think he was only 26. So he would have been like, well, what's that, 20, I guess, when he won that race. So, yeah, I mean, did an amazing thing, proper history, proper drivers, you know, terrific car.
And I think you've written about it, haven't you?
I have written about it, yes.
And that will be on the Intercooler app and website this week. So,
yeah. No, I've done a big story about its history, about what it's like to drive, where it came from, and yeah. So that'll be out this week at some stage.
Yeah, the-intercooler.com. And on Saturday, we get to find out what it goes for. They reckon 2.8 to 3.3 million. So. Sadly, I will not be bidding, nor will I be bidding for a very different car that has nevertheless caught my eye, which is a 2009. Now, I'm going to get the name of this wrong, but I'm going to go with what Bonhams have written, a Mercedes-Benz SLR McLaren 722S Roadster. Maybe that is right. I don't know. And
what's wrong with that?
Mercedes-Benz SLR. Yeah, okay.
Isn't it just a 722? The S is the only thing which... But there might have been an S specification.
Yeah, I don't know. And it is a Roadster. But it feels like AMG should be in there somewhere, but it's not. But anyway, this is one of only 150 such cars produced. And do you know what? What I remember is, because 2009, that means it's a late SLR. In fact, they'd been around quite a while by then. And what I remember is that there was a year when... Maybe a couple of years, when a whole string of fascinating supercars turned up. Things like the Ford GT, maybe even Carrera GT, Enzo, bits and pieces like that. Just a handful of years where some really mega top-end stuff rocked up. And it was really exciting. The SLR was one of them. This is the 722. So this isn't the Stirling Moss edition.
Which is that Barchetta sort of...
Yeah, the Barchetta, the windscreenless thing. This is a Roadster, but tricked up a little bit. 722, so that's the Mille Miglia reference. And this is expected to go for £240,000 to £320,000. The thing about these cars is they look like nothing else on the road. And I've only ever driven an SLR once, and it was the MSO edition, so a little bit different to this. But when you see one out in the public, it looks like some kind of alien spacecraft. The bonnet is so long. The styling is so out there.
And they sound absolutely... Yeah. Amazing
with that side exhaust
supercharged motor. And you know, the other thing to say is the 722, I mean, the original car when it first came out did attract quite a lot of criticism. I think the 722 was done to sort of address some of those issues. And you know, I think it was quite a changed car from memory. I think it had different suspension, and you know, there were quite a few things that different about it, and it was a much improved car. It was always held back a bit. The only thing that, you know, because it was so advanced with its carbon tub and with its carbon brakes, they never quite got the feel of the brakes right, and they were always, because it had so much torque, they were always a bit limited by the only gearbox that Mercedes had which could take that torque was the 5-speed automatic, which does sound a bit sort of old hat these days. And at the time, it was kind of fine. But otherwise, I mean, the cars are amazing. They handle superbly. They look amazing. They sound absolutely incredible. Mm. There's a lot to love there. And also, you know, compared to some of the other stuff, you know, what do you pay for a Carrera GT these days?
Oh, 800, 900?
Yeah, a Ford GT. It's actually... I see this in the context of those other cars. It's quite affordable, isn't it?
Yeah, relatively speaking, yeah. Okay, another one that I wanted to talk about is the 1967 short wheelbase 911 soft window Targa. Lovely red car. In the pictures, it looks immaculate. And this is chassis number 17, which they think is actually, it's one of the earliest examples. Certainly one of the earliest surviving examples. And they think that it might have even predated the first customer car because it was delivered to a dealership. This is chassis 17, and the first customer car was chassis 21. So this is one of the very earliest 911 Targas of any kind.
Does the fact it's a Targa put you off at all?
Well... it's up. The estimate is £140,000 to £180,000, and the point I was going to make is that I never really understood drop top 911s, but when we start looking at very old 911s, which for me it's probably a car that I would never drive quickly. I would never choose to drive one really quickly on the road. I'd never choose to properly exercise it because it's sort of alien to me. You know, it's from that era that I just haven't spent a lot of time driving these cars. And so the idea of pulling the roof off and bimbling about and mooching along and taking my time and just enjoying the sensations, all of a sudden that seems quite appealing.
Mm. Yeah, they're nice cars. They're nice cars. Yeah, I quite like Targas in a sort of middle-aged man kind of way. I think I'd still rather have a coupe, but don't know. They're pretty cool things.
Yeah, I think given the choice, Andrew, I would have a coupe as well, but I am starting to be drawn to these dropped-up 911s, these Targas, just a little bit. Okay, well, we've got Louis now from Bonhams, who's here. Hello, Louis. Thanks for taking the time to talk to us.
Not at all. Looking forward to it.
So you are the expert from Bonhams, so you can tell us a little bit more about this Goodwood Revival sale. We can quiz you on some of the cars.
Please do.
Your name, Louis, is Louis Frankel.
Yes, is.
Not the kind of surname you come across every day, unless you are a Frankel.
No, and I'd just like to say that we are entirely unrelated, and the fact that his father's my brother has got nothing to do with it whatsoever.
So, okay, so an uncle and nephew situation here, but we won't let that get in the way. Louis, tell us about this this sale. What's the headline car? We have been speaking about the DB3, but it looks like that is the big one.
Yeah, that is the big car in the sale. It's a very important car, not only in Aston Martin's history, but Goodwood history, which is why it's such a delight to sort of have the car back at a sale at Goodwood. And also, you know, what's lovely about this year is the Friday night race this year is the Peter Collins Trophy, which is to commemorate the inaugural Goodwood 9 Hours, which obviously this car won the inaugural Goodwood 9 Hours back in 1952 with Peter Collins driving. So it's lovely on that 70th anniversary of 1952 to have the car that won the first race back.
And Louis, I was saying, and I can't remember, and you may not know this, but I know that the car has been in its existing ownership for a very long time. So it's been such a long time since anybody could have had a chance to buy this car. Do you know how long it's been off the market for?
I think it's about 18 years now.
Yeah. So it's a long old time, isn't it?
It's a long old time. It's had some lovely owners in its history. Its history is documented from start to finish, all the way through. We know where it's been its entire life. We know what races it's done. Yeah. We know who's driven it. And, you know, what's so rare for this car as well, you know, being a 50s racing car, is that miraculously it still comes with its original engine. You know, most racing cars from that day, you know, they probably had 5 or 6 engines in the first 2 years of their life because they were racing cars. Yeah. But the engine that won the 52 Goodwood 9 Hours still comes with the car.
That's lovely.
And is it in the car, or is it just with the car additionally?
It's not in the car. So there's a sort of racier engine in the car that the owner has used.
Well, that's perfect, isn't it? So you could preserve the original.
Yeah.
Have it on a bench or, you know, in your sitting room or whatever, and then go and flog the nuts off, you know, one year or other. I mean, that's the way to do it, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the original engine is in a sort of, you know, it's in full running order. And the last time the owner did the sort of Mille Miglia retrospective, they did actually put the original engine back in it. And again, that's the engine that did the Mille Miglia back in 52. So they were very keen to sort of go and, you know, do the Mille Miglia exactly as it was back in the day, which is a lovely thing to have happened.
Louis, we were saying at the start of this podcast that I've noticed there tend to be two things with a Bonham sale. The first is variety, a real spread of stuff across the ages, across the categories, road car, race cars. But often with a Bonham sale, there seems to be a sort of theme that will reflect the occasion. So the occasion here is the Goodwood Revival. Really, it's a historic race meet. So is there a theme that kind of matches that?
I think, you know, there's a certain demographic that come to Goodwood and are interested in that event. So we always try and appeal to that. This sale in particular has sort of come together with a sort of very, very British focus, which has been really nice, you know, with the number of Aston Martins in the sale, the number of Jaguars and E-types in the sale. That's sort of been a running theme throughout. But also, you know, we always like to have sort of important competition cars. And I think, you know, in the sale, we've got two of the most important competition cars to come to market in a long time with the DB3, but also the Cooper Zerex.
So talk to us about the Cooper Zerex, because we were sort of, before this podcast, we were sort of exchanging notes. And I said, well, these, you know, I gave you a short list, didn't I, of cars that I thought were quite interesting. He said, no, we've got to talk about the Zerex. So
yeah.
Zerex is not a name that's going to mean anything to anyone out there. So enlighten us.
So the Zerex is an interesting car. It's certainly got a claim to sort of be one of the best sort of archaeological finds in terms of important racing cars over the years. You know, essentially, it's the first car to wear a McLaren badge. It's wow. Genesis for that company. You know, McLaren F1s, the 570Ss that people drive today. This is where it's all started. And what's interesting with this car is it actually started life as a Cooper Formula One car, and then evolved to become Bruce McLaren's Guards Trophy winning at Goodwood 1964 sports car. So it had an incredible life and is the first car to wear that McLaren badge.
So it actually wore a McLaren badge?
It did. It's the first car. It wore a McLaren badge. It was driven by Bruce. You know, it really is Genesis for that whole company.
And did Bruce design and engineer it himself?
He was certainly involved with it. He obviously had his team around him who were helping. And obviously, you know, the car was built off a pre-existing chassis. So it started life as a 61 Formula One car and then evolved over time. But it's been lost for a number of years. Mark Osborne, who you obviously spoke to the last time regarding our Quail sale, he's responsible for finding it, sourcing it and bringing it to market. And I think it's quite a special thing.
Is it sort of like in a load of cardboard boxes? Does someone need to go and spend a bazillion pounds on it? Or is it...
No, it's a complete wreck.
but complete.
but complete, you know, there's everything there from the space frame to the bodywork to the engine. Yeah, it's all there, but it's been in South America for a number of years, essentially sort of slowly rotting away. But, you know, we're bringing it back. And I think it's one of those cars that we will in the future see out racing again, which will be fantastic.
Can you think of a car more guaranteed to get a place on any Goodwood Revival grid that there's ever been than that?
I don't think it is. I think it's potentially one of the most important cars. I think it's an invitation to not only Goodwood but everything. You know, it's history. I mean, if you go through the catalogue, I mean, I think we've got a 12 or sort of 14 page spread on it. I mean, the whole history of the car is all documented, and it's an extraordinary read in terms of how it went from a Formula One car to being the first McLaren, and went through Briggs Cunningham ownership, and, you know, the names surrounding the car and associated with it are
presumably there's enough stuff with it so that whoever restores it, will be able to know exactly how to restore it. There are enough photographs of it. Presumably there are, I don't know if there are drawings
The interesting thing with it is it depends how you want to restore it, because it went through so many different iterations from Formula One car to sports car and various different sport cars. It's for someone to decide how they will want to restore it. I suspect what someone will do, and it's what I would personally do, is restore it back to its 64 Guards Trophy spec when Bruce drove it. I think that's the sort of peak of this chassis existence, and that I assume is probably what will take place. But should someone want to put it back to being a Formula One car, that is evidently possible as well.
Yeah, and I'm looking at it now. There are some lovely photos of it, I think, at Goodwood. So this is the right place for that car to be sold, isn't it? Because, as we all know, very sadly, this is where Bruce McLaren lost his life. But this car clearly has proper provenance at Goodwood. Wow, that's a really special thing.
Yeah, well, if you look in the catalogue, there's that fantastic period shot of Bruce coming through the chicane on the lock stops with you know, none other than Jim Clark right behind him. It's an extraordinary photo. And I, you know, the way the car looks there, I suspect is probably what someone will look to restore it to.
Yeah.
Can we change the pace a little bit? I want to talk about something a bit more sedate, a bit more, what's the word, regal.
I'm
just minded of the fact that, you know, with the sadness of the loss of Her Majesty, you have an Aston Martin, a Prince of Wales.
We do
Aston
have a
Martin Volante Vantage, or is it Vantage Volante? Whichever way around it is.
Yes.
Now, this isn't the car that was owned by the Prince of Wales, but it's one of a very short run of cars, I understand, effectively to his specification, because what he wanted was, you know, he wanted a big engine, didn't he? He wanted all the power, but he didn't want it to look that way. So it's a standard-looking Volante.
Exactly.
That goes like smoke.
Yeah, exactly. He basically wanted full Vantage and almost sort of X-Pack spec, but with the narrow, slightly more subtle bodywork. And I think from memory, I think after his order, I think they, over a two-year period, I think they only built 26 Volantes in this spec. So you know, of all the V8s, you know, everyone sort of talks about the X-Packs. This is the really rare one. The sort of, you know, the pinnacle of that. And I think the narrow bodywork looks fantastic, because, you know, most people assume you've got a normal Volante, but those that know. And you know, the big giveaway is the Vantage bonnet, but they're very special things, and
which it needs
rare
to have, doesn't it? Because it's got those big carbs on it. So that's not a matter of choice, is it? You can't have a normal bonnet.
Absolutely. And what makes this one even rarer is it's got a manual gearbox, and I can't remember exactly how many of them are manuals, but it's not all of them. So, you know, for someone who wants to go and cruise with the roof down in big V8 Aston, I mean, this really is the one to have.
There's something comforting about knowing that our new king once specified the more powerful engine in the more modest body. That is a man of taste, isn't it?
It really is, isn't it? Yeah.
Isn't that fantastic?
Absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, so to be sold without reserve, estimated to go for anywhere between 300,000 and £500,000. So that is a special car. We spoke earlier about a short wheelbase 911, early 911. This one was a Targa. And Andrew said he would probably prefer a coupe. I think you can offer him one of those, can't you?
We can. We can offer him, it's not just any sort of short wheelbase 911. It's a full sort of FIA race car. But what makes this special, and I'm assuming most of your readers and listeners will have seen the video of a short wheelbase 911 being driven round Spa on the lock stops. It's done, I think it's either done just over or just under 1 million views on YouTube. But we do have that car coming for sale. It's in immaculate condition. It's ready to race. If you haven't seen the video, just go into YouTube and type in Porsche 911 drift, and you will see this car round Spa on the lock stops everywhere, going past everything from E-types to Falcons to even a 904 at one point. I think it's my favorite onboard of any lap anywhere. It's amazing. But yes,
and this is that car. And what's the guide on that car?
So we're guiding this at sort of 160 to 200. So obviously, you know, a lot of that is based on particularly with the popularity of the 2 litre cup, one of the sort of most competitive historic racing championships. Yeah.
That's a crazy championship now, isn't it?
Yeah, I think they're sort of up to sort of 35, 40 car grids now. And obviously this car is eligible for that, has run in it previously, as well as things like Spa 6 Hours and everything over the years. So, you know, if you want a ticket to go and race in one of the most competitive championships there is, this is your ticket to do that.
Yeah, that footage will be responsible for turning so many people on to historic racing, because it's so much more balletic and presumably more fun than a car with a load of aero, sticky, slick tyres that's glued to the ground. This thing is all over the place and it looks fantastic. Yeah, so I totally understand the appeal of that car.
Yeah. So while we're on that subject, and maybe you haven't quite got that sort of money, but you still really fancy skidding about in a classy 1960s race car, I couldn't help noticing you've got a Giulia Super race car in there, which is guiding at 30 to 40.
Yes.
Which strikes me as being a whole lot of car for not a lot of money.
Agreed. Well, as you and I both know, I think you and I would probably admit we've had more fun together in a pair of those than we've probably had doing anything else.
They are the most wonderful cars.
Yeah.
Well, and for that sort of money, as a way into historic racing, I just think it's a bargain. I really is there anything we don't know about that car,
That car's a very well-known car. It's competed at Goodwood in the St. Mary's Trophy a number of times. It was previously owned by Ben Shuckburgh, who's a very competitive historic racer and used to run CKL. It was his car for a number of years that he raced, took it to Goodwood, competed at Goodwood a number of times. So of all the Giulia Supers, it's probably one of the most well-known cars of the lot. And it's got FIA papers should you want to go and do stuff on the continent as well, which just makes it, you know, there's not a weekend anywhere in the UK or Europe where you can't be racing that car. If what you want to do is go and do as many races in a season as possible on a budget, that's the perfect car.
And that's the thing I think that people so often forget when they're sort of poring over wonderful racing cars. It's not just the car and even what it did or how fast it is or anything else. It's what you can do with it.
Absolutely.
And the thing with cars like that is they are so eligible, aren't they?
Absolutely.
And you know, because you can make them road legal very easily, you can go and do on-road events, you can do tours, you can race them in. There are so many series in the UK alone where you could race a car like that, and all over Europe. By historic race cars kind of money, you know, a great car to drive, wonderful twin cam engine, real classic car, but just not an awful lot of money.
No, absolutely. There's nothing there's nothing you can't go and do with it. With the benefit with this one, it's already road registered. So there's nothing stopping you going to do, you know, Tor Auto, Modena Centauri. It's good to go for that.
Taking your kids to school?
Yeah, absolutely.
Supermarket shop?
Yeah, I'd probably recommend some earplugs, but other than that, it'd be fine.
Well, they come cheap, don't they? So that's fine. Were there any other cars that you wanted to pull out?
The only other one I would like to mention is we've got a Series 1 flat floor E-type, which is also an outside bonnet lock car. It's chassis 31, which in itself is very rare. It's one of the first, you know, 50 cars built outside bonnet lock, flat floor. But what's...
Is that the Roadster?
That is the Roadster, but it's the story behind that car that's so lovely. The current owner of our vendor for the car, he purchased the car in December 1961, which I think when the car was about 2 or 3 months old. And there was a real shortage of right-hand drive cars. And he was driving around in his 3.8 Mark II Jag, and he saw a for sale sign in the window. So he bought it. And he also at the time owned a DB5 and went to Aston Martin and said, could you fit a tow bar to my DB5 so I can take my E-type racing? At which point they sort of, you know, snubbed it and sort of laughed away. So he fitted his own tow bar, and he used to, for a number of years, tow his E-type to Prescott, Silverstone, on the back of a trailer, on the back of his DB5, and he raced the car. I mean, he had DB5 as a tow car. The E-Type was his race car, and he's owned the car since 1961. And he's, you know, when you get stories like that, when someone's owned that car for so long and done such amazing things with it, it's a real honor to be offered the car.
So he's had this car for over 60 years.
Yes, absolutely. He's had it. The car was 3 months old. Well, it was 3 months old when he bought it, essentially.
So somebody had bought it, not wanted to keep it for whatever reason. So he was the second owner.
Yeah, he was desperate for a right drive E-Type, but couldn't. He'd been told he would have to wait about a year to get one. And he saw a for sale sign in this. He was just driving around, so he bought it. And
what kind of condition is it? Has it been put back to road car specification, or maybe it was always in road car specification?
No, so it's now as it's exactly as it was when it left the factory. It's immaculate. It was restored by Vicarage a few years ago, and it's sort of, you know, but through its life, he used it as a hill climb car, a race car, and then in the 70s, having developed the car as a race car, he then sort of did some mod sport stuff with it, and then it sort of sat unused for a few years before he decided to fully restore it back to how it was when he bought it, and that's the condition we find it in today. But it's such lovely, you know, the story. Owned it for over 60 years, used to tow it behind his DB5. It's just the story behind it's just fantastic.
You imagine what that must have looked like, seeing a DB5 towing an E-Type.
It's so cool,
just driving
it's
down
so cool,
the road,
isn't it? I love about so many of the consignments that you've managed to get for the sellers. They've just got great stories to them, haven't they? They're not just a car. They're not just a bit of, you know, metal and rubber and oil and everything else. They've got proper stories. They've done proper stuff.
Yeah.
I love all that.
Yeah, absolutely. The only other one I'd probably like to mention is that the 722S Roadster we've got, but just purely on the spec of that car, is absolutely stunning. With the dark green over the tan, it's a delivery mileage car, so I think it's done 50 miles from new. I've never seen another one in that spec, and it's just, yeah, I think that's a special car.
We had a chat about
that earlier before you came on.
Well, there we go. There's some fascinating cars in there. Tell us a little bit more though about the way things are in the market. I mean, still lots of interest, lots of cool cars to consign.
Absolutely. So I'm talking to you from Bewley. We've just had our Bewley sale over the weekend. It's one of our longest running sales here at Bonhams. We had a 78 car sale, and we've sold 70 lots, so only 8 unsold. So, you know, very healthy from our point of view here, and obviously a lovely sort of run into Goodwood.
Sorry to interrupt, but presumably a different kind of consignment for Bewley than for Goodwood.
Absolutely. So a lot of sort of very early pre-war cars, sort of on the lower end, the sort of, you know, 10 to 50,000 pound range for pre-war cars. That's sort of our bread and butter down at this sale, which has all gone, you know, they've all gone very, very well. But yeah, you know, it's a completely different auction to Goodwood, but it's all part of, you know, what we like doing here at Bonhams, which is, you know, catering to all audiences. Obviously, you know, Goodwood next week is our premier auction of the year. And obviously, as you can see, it's where all our sort of very high-end lots go. But we also like catering for the lower end of the market as well. And, you know, off the back of this weekend, that still looks to be, you know, healthy to us off the back of the results we've just had.
Good stuff. Okay, well, Louis, thank you for coming onto the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, and for telling us about the Bonham sale at Goodwood Revival this coming Saturday. We're looking forward to seeing how all these lots do. I'm sure we'll do this again at some point. Thank you for your time.
Not at all. Thank you, guys.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinas.
I'm Kayla Itzinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.